Ms. Clerk, please call the first case on our docket.
The Daily Press and Others versus Commonwealth of Virginia and Another. Brett A. Spain, Bethany J. Fogarty, Appellant's Counsel, F. Jefferson James, Senior Assistant Commonwealth's Attorney, Rhonda L. Spady, Assistant Commonwealth's Attorney, Appellee's Counsel.
You may proceed, counsel.
May it please the court. My name is Brett Spain, and I'm counsel for the media parties in this appeal. I have Mr. Desjardins, Peter Desjardins, who's in the court with us today, as well as the Daily Press and the Virginian Pilot. I know the court has read the briefs. I don't intend to recite the facts or go over all the arguments that we made therein, but we, of course, are relying on all of the grounds that are stated. Now, this is the first of two appeals that the court's going to hear this morning regarding an order entered by the lower court closing a proceeding, closing a hearing, and keeping certain records under seal. It is an order that neither the defendant nor the Commonwealth is eager to defend. As we noted in our brief,
did the defendant even ask for this remedy that the court gave?
It did not. When you say ask for it, I paused over that. He did not move for this relief at all. He showed up at the original hearing with the public present, mm-hmm. and did not even move to close it. When the oral motion was made, he did not make a written motion. Did not make his own oral motion. He did support the motion, but to his credit, counsel said, "I'm supporting this, but I do not have any legal authority to justify it."
Has he presented any legal authority to this date?
No. He filed a motion to strike the pleadings before the hearing on sort of the same basis as the City of Newport News has argued that they should be stricken. But he has never argued that this is an appropriate remedy under the First Amendment or under Virginia law. It's more procedural type of arguments. Now, the Commonwealth has appeared on appeal with new counsel, and I will note that the new counsel has dutifully filed an opposition to it, but that opposition has abandoned the basis for which the motion was even made in the first place, which was primarily on the pandemic.
On your theory, what would the remedy be from our court if you were to prevail? Would it be a reverse and an order unsealing both the transcript of the hearing and the documents and motion attached? Or would it be a remand for doing a proper constitutional and common law analysis of the factors that need to be addressed before a trial court does a sealing or a closure motion?
It would be the first, Your Honor, and it would apply to both the motion to revoke bond as well as the motion to preclude certain defenses, which is also at issue here, in which the court has also had a hearing on and taken under advisement. And of the cases that this court has ruled on these issues, I'm not aware of any that it was remanded for further proceedings on that. The court has, and we went out of our way to make sure that the transcript, we haven't seen it, but it was transcribed at the hearing that was closed so that the court could see it under seal. The court has all the documents that were filed under seal, and I don't.
356 pages of attachments and 91 pages of motions. So is it really appropriate for the court, the appellate court, in the first instance, do the analysis required by the Constitution and common law that the trial court should have done in the first instance?
Your Honor, we certainly think that the lower court didn't do it correctly, didn't look at the right factors, but the court did an analysis of some kind. The basis that the court offered, we don't think are valid and could
possibly.
But if
we agreed with you and reversed it, that the prima facie explanation was insufficient on its face, the correct standards had not been addressed by the lower court. So it's a tough question. I'm not sure I'm implying an answer one way or the other, but I'm
right.
Looking to see what the two of you say.
I understand completely, Your Honor, and I know why you're asking the question. Certainly, when we're talking about an issue of access, one of the things that this court has said that contemporaneous access is important. Now, obviously, we're not having contemporaneous access. The fact that we have to intervene and appeal these kinds of decisions makes it almost impossible for us to have meaningful access when it's denied. We live with that. Almost the first question on these kinds of cases when they come up here is, why is this not moved? Is it capable of repetition yet evading review? Because the case is done. This is one of the few opportunities where we actually have the ability to have access to it while the case is still going on. Now, if you send it back and you remand it and say, go do what you should have done before, we won't. It will be well after the case is done before we get access to it. So the trial court did an analysis. It wasn't correct, we respectfully submit. The court has the full record here. It has everything that was filed under seal. It can make that determination, and I would urge the court to do that than rather have a second round of
this. Suppose somewhere in the 356 pages is an internal affairs document with a confidential informant or something that truly would meet the Constitution and common law standard for purposes of closure or sealing. You haven't obviously seen the documents, but suppose that were true.
Your Honor, I haven't seen them, and I will note that the lower court has not identified any of those things. The defendant has not identified any of those things. The Commonwealth has not identified any of those things. The City of Newport News has not identified any of those things. The most sensitive that any party has even attempted to argue would be the internal affairs records of the City of Newport News. And, Your Honor, those are not privileged. The city is trying to claim that they are privileged and as a matter of law should not have access, should not be granted to them, but they are not privileged.
As a practical matter, do you know what the trial date is? I know that you're not party to that case.
And I will let the parties correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding from looking at the record is it's August 29th.
You don't see it, but counsel behind you is nodding yes.
So we're here. The defendant is not here. The Commonwealth is here doing his job, and I understand that he's got to do that. I'm not going to go over in great detail the grounds that the court offered for its justification. We don't think that any of them are sufficient. Obviously, the Commonwealth is not relying on the pandemic at this point. The courts are open. The pandemic subsided. There's no reason to think that the court can't see the jury on August 29th. The other grounds were nature of the case and publicity involving other police shootings, which in my mind is two different ways of saying the same thing, and that's basically just the nature of the case. We have a police officer who shot an unarmed man. There have been other situations where that has occurred. That's enough to, it may cause prejudice. And this court, Supreme Court of the United States, has repeatedly said that that kind of conclusory justification is not sufficient. I will listen to anything the Commonwealth has to say and react to it, but this has been brief and I really have not much more to add to it.
Ask one more question. Is my recollection and my notes right that the trial judge at some point said that the confidential documents, the 356 pages of documents, were not introduced or discussed during the hearing itself, which was also sealed? So is there any question about unsealing the hearing on appeal as opposed to remanding it for further analysis?
I don't think so, and just to be clear, there's two separate sets of documents. One is the motion to revoke bond that's 91 pages, mm-hmm. and that was completely filed under seal, mm-hmm. and that's what you're talking about. That was the one that the court actually had the hearing on with the transcript that was put under seal. And in that one, the court said, we were able to conduct this hearing without actually having to refer to the documents, refer to some of the facts, I think, that were in those documents, but without referring to the documents themselves. Certainly, we think that that is something that could be unsealed right away. The documents, from what I can tell, and the court made a point of this, there are no guarantee materials in those documents. They don't relate to the guilt or innocence in this case. They were about things that occurred beforehand. The court went out of its way to say that that's what was at issue in those documents. So I don't think there's any concern with the documents otherwise. The other set that you're talking about, the bigger set, is for the motion that they wanted to preclude certain defenses such as self-defense, defense of others, and the victim's character.
That was the 91-page motion?
No, that was the motion to revoke bond. It was 91 pages. The 353, that was the other one. It was the full appendix. The actual motion and brief were filed in open in the clerk's office that you can, and not under seal, but the appendix was completely under seal for that one. Now, if you look at the, because we can look at least the brief in there, you can see that those records don't involve, in many instances, anything from the City of Chesapeake's internal affairs. You'll see there's an autopsy report, 911 call, body camera footage, things that aren't at issue in this case. I don't know why the court didn't release those. I don't know what the concern would be with those. The court in that case, for that one, said it's not part of the adjudicatory process at this point, so I don't have to rule on it. And respectfully, Your Honor, we think that that's not correct. This court is well aware, 17.1-208 of the Virginia Code says that all records maintained by the clerk's office in proceedings are open for inspection. That's the default rule. Now, obviously, you can have things that are filed under seal, but I would like to point the court to what it said in the Daily Press case on this very issue.
Before you get to the Daily Press case, there are jurisdictions that take the position that on a sliding scale, bond hearings don't enjoy the same full presumption as a trial. I don't see a case where this court has spoken to that. Did you find a case where we have addressed an issue of a bond hearing?
No, I don't believe this court has addressed the bond hearing. The N. Ray Worwell case from the Court of Appeals noted that they have been held to be subject to the First Amendment right. We've cited to the N. Ray Washington Post case. We've cited to a D.C. case. I think it's been upheld by the First, Third, Fifth, and Ninth Circuits?
Fifth not.
Pardon me?
Fifth, no, not the Fifth. The Fifth is the one that has taken the
opposite
position.
Oh, well, I must be looking at a different case than Your Honor. Your Honor, and I do want to reserve some time here to respond, but I do want to read this quote, and I'll finish there. This is from the Daily Press case, page 456. Code 17.1-208 explicitly states that any records and papers maintained by the clerk shall be open to inspection by any person. With respect to our analysis, Code Section 17.1208's statutory presumption of access is equivalent to the constitutional right of access. Court documents can only be sealed on the basis of an interest so compelling that it cannot be protected reasonably by some measure other than a protective order, and any such order must be drafted in the manner least restrictive of the public's rights. So, Your Honor, we have documents that are under seal.
Excuse me, counsel, I've got a question for you. How do you square what you just said with Rule 3A:12b2, which says that, you know, documents that are produced pursuant to a subpoena deuces tecum are to be held under seal by the clerk?
Those are the discovery records, Your Honor, and if there is a conflict, the court can resolve it. But my understanding, and we made clear that we were not asking for those records. That was in our motion. We are not asking for the things that are held by the clerk as discovery records returned according to the subpoena.
But the quote you just said anything that's being held by the clerk.
Your Honor, it did, but it was the quote from this court, so I don't.
That's what I'm saying. So how do you square that?
I don't know how to deal
rule
with that. So, but my point is that you can't just let documents sit under seal for a court case. Now, the discovery, that's something else, but when you have something that's been filed under seal and it's brought to your attention, you have to undertake this analysis. You can't say it's not part of the adjudicatory process. It's not been admitted as evidence. There's been no judgment. Once they're there, if they're going to be under seal, the court has to do this analysis, and it did not. And if it's okay, I'm down to about 2 minutes. I'd like to reserve what little time I have left for rebuttal.
All right. You have 2 minutes and 5 seconds.
May it please the court, my name is Jeff James. I'm a senior assistant commonwealth attorney for the city of Suffolk. I'll tell you at the outset that I was not involved in the initial litigation in this case. There's been a change of administrations in my office, and the person who actually filed this motion is no longer employed by the commonwealth attorney's office.
So what should we draw from your disclaimer, counsel?
Sorry, Justice.
What should we draw from your disclaimer?
I can tell you that I've been an attorney for 40 years this year, actually, and much of that time has been spent as a prosecutor. I can tell you that I would not have filed a motion to revoke bond against a man who is out on bond for something that had happened years before the offense for which he's charged.
Okay, but the issue before us is whether the documents that were attached to that motion should have remained sealed. So does your disclaimer extend to that part of the analysis?
No,
not
you're,
that
I'm
bound by your legal analysis.
I'm struggling with this, and I've been struggling with this. I don't know that an attorney can take a document that has been filed under seal and suddenly take it out of the category as being under seal simply by attaching it to a motion. These documents were sealed, the subpoena ducis tecum documents were sealed both by operation of the rule and by order of the court. And I don't know that, I certainly wouldn't chance doing something like that if a circuit court judge had ordered that all the records be sealed. I know what the records say. I don't know what was said at the hearing because I don't even have a transcript of the hearing. But I know what the records say. And I really don't think they should have been a subject of a bond hearing. That's the best I can answer it, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Should the transcript of the hearing remain sealed?
For now, Your Honor.
Sorry?
And we're getting close to the trial date. I think it's probably a little over 2 months away. And my fear is that whatever happened in that hearing, and I don't know exactly what was said, but I can surmise it. Whatever happened in that hearing was something that, if the paper published it, would make it more difficult to pick a jury on the 29th.
Well, that's always true when there's newspaper articles about a crime in a local jurisdiction.
That's true.
And that's why we have voir dire, and that's why we have peremptory challenges and for cause. So what is the compelling state interest in keeping the public unaware of a bond hearing involving someone who is alleged to have committed a violent crime?
That's a tough question, Your Honor. I'll be honest with you. I have a hard time arguing it because I wouldn't have made that motion in the first place.
So you actually haven't seen the 356 pages of attachments?
Oh, I have seen the attachments. Yes, I have, Your Honor.
As best you can tell, without conceding anything, if we sit down and go page by page, line by line, word by word, are we going to find something in there that involves a juvenile, a confidential informant, a sting operation, some form of obvious improper information that would go to the public? Are we going to find anything like that?
Absolutely not.
So then, assuming without conceding anything, we conclude that the proper standards were not applied on the sealing and the closure motion, we should just unseal it right now, assuming without deciding that the first premise is right.
The court could do that, Your Honor. Probably the prudent thing to do would be to have the circuit court conduct another analysis, but then we're getting to the point where the case is probably going to be tried before the court can actually conduct that analysis. I know I don't represent the defendant, but as a minister of justice, I have to do my best to make sure he gets a fair trial. And I'm afraid...
But he never made these motions. He just joined in it after it was thrown in his lap.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
He never asserted that a jury could not be properly picked because of the pandemic or because of whatever.
Exactly. I'm saying it's my job as a prosecutor to ensure the defendant gets a fair trial. That was the standard I was talking about. Mm-hmm. It's a messy situation, one that probably should never have happened. If the court decides to just unseal the records, so be it, and we'll deal with it as we have to. If the court decides to remand the case, maybe it could remand with instructions to the court to conduct a page-by-page analysis of the records. I notice in the hearing with Mr. Spain, when they were arguing his motion to intervene, the judge said we considered the records, but she didn't really say she looked at them page by page. She was more concerned about the general atmosphere as it goes with police shootings and the publicity of this case. I think the pandemic's a non-issue, Your Honor. I don't even want to address that. Because juries were being seated at the time this case was came before the court on Mr. Spain's motion. As I see it, the court has two choices, and the court knows what its choices are, either order the records unsealed or send it back for a further hearing with direction to the lower court. But it does bother me that an attorney can unilaterally unseal something that's sealed by operation of law. simply by attaching it to a motion. That's what bothers me. I don't know that that takes it out of its categories being legitimately sealed under 3A12. That's my conundrum.
Right. I guess your fear is that if we rule that that's the way it works, then anytime you wanted to basically smear a defendant, you can put whatever you wanted to in a motion for bond, and it would become a public record.
Yes, Your Honor. And I think bond hearings are a little different because bond hearings usually, other than the initial one, don't address the substance of the case. And Your Honors that have sat on the circuit court benches know that a lot of times the bond hearings consist of proffers made by the attorneys, and they're not tested by the rules of evidence or the rules of cross-examination or anything of that nature. And I think because of that, probably what comes in bond hearings are things that, for the most part, are completely irrelevant to the case as charged. And that's what makes this different. I know that in the Worrell case, the court referred to, I believe, a Ninth Circuit case involving John DeLorean, where the court sealed the bond hearing out in California, and the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals says you can't do that. But I don't know of any case in Virginia actually addressing that issue, and that's why I made the comment in my brief that I believe this is a case of first impression for this court. I don't have a whole lot more to say other than it's a messy situation, not of my own creation, but as I told both Mr. Reveley and Mr. Spain outside the courtroom, I have to serve the meal. I didn't cook it. If there are any other questions, I don't have anything else to say.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Spain, you got 2 minutes and 5 seconds.
And I will be brief, Your Honor. Just 2 points I wanted to address. I want to note for the record that the documents aren't unsealed. I mean, everybody keeps saying that the attorney has unilaterally unsealed them. That's not an argument that we have made. Certainly, there was a procedure that should have been followed here as far as
but
probably...
But the logical conclusion, if we address or accept the argument that because they are now attached to the motion, they're now basically available for review by everyone, the logical conclusion of that argument would be by attaching these sealed documents to a motion, the attorney has unilaterally unsealed them.
Your Honor, I disagree with that slightly in that what the effect of it is would be making it subject to the presumption of access. But if there's something that was properly sealed in the first place and something that should remain under seal, then they will remain under seal. The act of filing them and attaching them simply makes them a judicial record.
If they were sealed pursuant to law or pursuant to rule? What about that?
Well, Your Honor, it would depend. If there's something by law that just simply cannot be made public, then that would justify theoretically further sealing. But
let me ask you this. Is that statutory rule concerning sealing or statutory determination concerning sealing or rule concerning sealing abridged by somebody just attaching it to as an exhibit to a pleading? Why wouldn't whatever that rule is still apply to the document?
You mean Rule
3A12? Yeah. That the documents are sealed unless they're admitted into evidence.
Well, Your Honor, that rule deals with how they're supposed to be handled in discovery. It doesn't say what can or cannot be done with them, who can use them. Certainly, if a party who has produced documents thinks that it's something that should not be ever except under seal, they can file a motion for a protective order asking the court to prohibit them to be filed. And I see my red light's going off. I do want to answer Your Honor's question.
Please do.
But, Your Honor, the way you do that is ask for a protective order before they're used. The City of Newport News did not do that. The City of Newport News didn't even object after they were filed in this case. The City of Newport News didn't show up until 6 weeks later after the media had come and asked for access to
them. But if they're still under seal, counsel, how can they be used? That's the conundrum that I'm having. The documents, as you just said, they're still under seal.
How could they be used at all? I mean, the purpose of the rule is to so you can subpoena records to be used. How could you admit them into evidence if they're under seal? How could you file a motion and ask and support, except you have to use them at some point? That's
the
step.
You have to use them at some point, which
right.
means they have to be unsealed in order to be used. These documents, as you've said, are still under seal.
They can be filed. You can ask for leave to file under seal, which the procedure should have been done. But once it was done this way, the court had to undertake the analysis. We've cited to the Globe newspaper case, which makes the point that you can't have a rule that automatically says closure is appropriate or sealing is appropriate.
I understand.
In every case, you have to do that analysis.
Chief, could I ask a question?
Yes, sure.
Okay. Does the answer to this question under 3A12B2, the last sentence, where it says that until such time as the subpoena materials are admitted into evidence, they must remain under seal unless the court finds that some or all the materials be unsealed? Would that be the answer to the question? That they'll stay sealed unless the court orders they be unsealed.
That's part of the question. I mean, I think that's why the Commonwealth did what it did. It filed them under seal. My point is, though, once you file them in court, once you've made that determination that the material that you have subpoenaed is relevant to your case and needs to be used, if you file it under seal, the circuit court then has to say, all right, should they continue to be under seal? That's one way of triggering it, is saying they've been.
And at that point, we're talking about the Constitution and the common law and the statute, not a rule of discovery.
Right, absolutely. And we have 17.1208, which is the statutory codification of the constitutional principle.
What about the instance where people attach something to a motion which is not relevant to the motion, but the thing they want is to make sure the thing is unsealed? I mean, you know, so it seems like to me if that's the way the rule works, I mean, you're just like, okay, well, I'll attach, you know, his, you know, medical records, et cetera, because we might need to know about those things, right?
Your Honor, I don't know how to address a situation when the litigants aren't acting professional and doing it for improper purposes. I think that's
or
something I don't
they're know. Ill-advised in like
and,
thinking
and,
that these documents are at all relevant to what
then,
they're trying to.
And the way the way that should be done is you ask for leave to file them under seal. And whatever, if you want to protect yourself, you file it. The court will decide. The trial court. I mean, that's the point. Is the once you get to that stage, the trial court can make that decision, but it has to do the analysis. You can't just let them sit there under seal and say, well, we haven't gotten to a judgment. It's not part of the, I haven't considered them yet. Once they're filed, that's what triggers it. And that's what the court needed to do and didn't do in this case. And I understand there could be, I guess, theoretically abuse of that, but that's something the trial court can deal with as well. But these records are returned to be used, to be at least considered for use. And the Commonwealth did what it thought it needed to do. It filed them under seal. And that's where we are. And so once you're there, they're judicial records under the law of Virginia, under the First Amendment, under the common law, and that's when the presumption of access and that analysis needs to apply.
All right. Thank you, counsel. We'll be in touch with you soon. Thank you all. Please call the next case, Ms. Clerk.